The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Well, I guess you've heard the latest. A leaked draft of a Supreme Court decision from February has been circulating. It looks like a majority opinion written by Chief Justice Alito, supposedly with the agreement of at least four other conservative justices. One portion of the 98-page draft decision reads as follows. We hold that Roe and Casey must be overruled. The inescapable conclusion is that a right to abortion is not deeply rooted in the nation's history and traditions. It is time to heed the Constitution and return the issue of abortion to the people's elected representatives. Roe was egregiously wrong from the start. Some of the words of Justice Alito. Well, initially there was a lot of back and forth talking on news shows as to whether or not this was authentic. Apparently, Chief Justice Roberts has now settled at least that question. I'm reading from CNBC. Supreme Court Justice John Roberts on Tuesday confirmed the authenticity of a leaked draft court opinion that would toss out long-standing abortion rights, but he noted that the court's decision isn't final. Roberts ordered an investigation into the leaker. To the extent this betrayal of the confidences of the court was intended to undermine the integrity of our operations, it will not succeed, the Chief Justice said in a statement. The work of the court will not be affected in any way. I have directed the marshal of the court to launch an investigation into the source of the leak, Roberts said. And then the writer of the news article goes on to say, the advance publication of a draft opinion is virtually unprecedented for the high court, where leaks of any kind are exceedingly rare. Again, that was from CNBC. Okay, there's hysteria coming from the left. There's euphoria coming from the right. Both reactions are premature. So let me try to offer some measured words, some balance. First, as Chief Justice Roberts said, and I seldom agree with Roberts these days, but he's right on this one. As he said, this is only a draft from February. When the final decision is made, the decision may be different. While Alito himself is a person of integrity, let us not forget how many of our so-called conservative justices have caved in the past. They wouldn't even listen to the amorphous evidence of election fraud in 2020. This is the bottom line. Right now, we don't know anything about what will happen regarding Roe versus Wade. We don't. Next! The overturning of Roe v. Wade, even if it does happen, does not mean that abortion is suddenly illegal everywhere in the country. It simply means this matter will go back to the states, and most states will continue to keep it legal. In a few, such as Arkansas or Texas, that might change. Now, I say that with some hesitation, because too many conservative pundits are reassuring the left, almost as if to say, oh, don't worry, you can still have your abortion. They say it as if they want to score political points. Like, well, don't rally around this. It's not really going to change anything. For myself, I have no desire to be politically comforting to those who want the practice of abortion to continue. Now look, on this program, we've talked a lot about the love of God, the forgiveness of God toward people who've had abortions, toward anything. My wife runs a tremendous ministry. She's talked about it often on this show, a ministry of healing and reconciliation for women who've had abortions and have regretted their decisions. But my friends, Forgiveness is one thing. Justifying a practice is something else altogether. I believe abortion should be illegal everywhere in every state. That's not going to happen, but I'll just tell you, I think that should happen. Putting aside the fact that this is the taking of a human life, and it would be the taking of a human life no matter what country in the world you lived in, just keeping it in America for now, just keeping it constitutional for now, because that's what we're talking about, the Constitution, it is not called for in the Constitution. This hidden right to an abortion that the justices found in 1973 leaves much to be desired. As a matter of fact, our Constitution says the opposite. The Constitution is about protecting human rights, and the most basic of these rights is the right to remain alive without somebody killing you. Just look at some of the phrases in the preamble. Establish justice. We aren't treating people with justice if we're ending their lives. Ensure domestic tranquility. Not too tranquil if you're dead, domestic or otherwise, unless you mean the kind of tranquility where you never again have a conscious thought. And that's not the kind of tranquility our forefathers were thinking of. Provide for the common defense. That means defending from those who would harm you. I'd say one example of such defense is defending people from those who want to kill them. You can talk about the body of the mother. There's another body inside. Who are we kidding? And even if you wanted to debate about the first trimester, this has become infanticide. In some places, you can get an abortion far beyond when the baby is viable, far beyond when the baby can be delivered, far beyond when the baby could live outside the womb. There are even states trying to protect the mother's right after it has already been delivered. But don't worry, Governor Northam of Virginia, when they were trying to float a bill to that effect, gave us very reassuring words. He promised, he guaranteed that while the mother was deciding whether or not to end her new recently born baby's life, the baby would be kept comfortable. Well, thank you at least for that, Governor. And so, my fellow conservatives are a little too consoling to reassure their liberal friends that the overturning of Roe v. Wade will not really put an end to this practice. The practice should be overturned everywhere without apology. Be that as it may, in the interest of being factual, yes, what they're saying is technically true, that nobody who wants an abortion in this country is going to be prevented from getting one. There will always be some place you can go. The reason we are hearing from leftist politicians that this would end abortion everywhere is because they're using this as a political ploy to rally their base. That's rather obvious. Also obvious, this was leaked deliberately by someone who is bothered by the preliminary decision, and probably even more bothered that it might become the official decision. It's a useful tool for useful fools to gain momentum in November and keep Republicans from taking back Congress. What else are the Democrats going to run on? Safer cities? Lower crime? Stronger foreign policy? Booming economy? Women's rights, which give out medals to men who win women's track meets? But it's not just about November. They are hoping to use this as an excuse for Democrats to pack the court. Nothing in the Constitution limits the amount of justices to 9. So yeah, just pack it with liberals until you get the decision you want. It's not about ruling on something constitutional. It's about politics. It's about power. Now, many have taken solace in the fact that this leaker is probably a law clerk who will get disbarred and never practice law again. My friends, you don't understand. Yes, of course they'll get disbarred. Of course they'll never practice law again if they're discovered. And they want to be discovered because this person or persons has no interest anymore in staying with the law profession. They are auditioning for a different job, a different role, the role of hero, a permanent gig on CNN or MSNBC. They'll be the darling of the leftist media. One final thought. Everyone knows that the unborn fetus is a life. Everyone, even our president, and this president doesn't know much about anything, but he at least knows this. In his efforts to reassure his base that abortion will not end, he promised the day would never come when people can no longer abort a child. No, he didn't say fetus. He said child. Of course, the word fetus means baby. We've always known what we were talking about. It's just that we were always talking Orwellian. This is Bob Siegel pointing to how even Joe Biden has accidentally made the obvious obvious.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, co-hosting with me tonight and in the studio, not on the phone from Texas, in person, incarnate. Say hello to Jim Barrier.
Hey, man, it's really good to be in the studio. You know, it's just much more alive and real, and we can make eye contact. And you
radio
can,
the way the good Lord intended
exactly,
it.
Exactly, as intended by God. Man, I loved that opening piece, and I'm here. You know, I have a funny mind, as you know, and I'm listening to you, but I'm seeing Batman, biff, boom, pow, when you, every time you delivered a punchline.
One of the dumbest shows ever to grace television, but I'll take it as a compliment.
Can't help it. That's when I grew up.
I never forgave Batman because it ruined Lost in Space. Lost in Space was a great show as far as kids' science fiction goes. Batman tried to be serious the first episode. Nobody took them seriously. The producers got the cue. They said, well, we'll just make fun of ourselves every week. So they deliberately made themselves stupid and campy. They started beating Lost in Space in the ratings. So the Lost in Space people, season two, said, well, we'll be stupid and campy.
Works
they
every
betrayed
time.
The fans. Yeah. I've never, and when I found out that that was because of Batman, now I loved Batman comic books, though. But the comic books were nothing like that show. The comic books were much more reminiscent of The Dark Knight and some of the.
Very dark.
And I love some of the current Batman movies. That's a whole different story.
That's another story. But so that's in my mind what was going on. I couldn't agree more with you on the points you were making. I happen to be one who believes that this has been a ploy, accidental release that took place.
No accident at all, of course. No.
And I think it was because they have run out of hope for the midterms, that they being the Democrats and the liberal side, and they have nowhere to go. So it's, well, what are we going to stir up this time? We're going to scare people. We're going to scare our base and say, you're going to lose the right to abortion, so they can try to rally whatever troops they have left.
And that
left.
Could rally the base, but it yeah. could also rally the right if the yeah. people on the right would quit apologizing and just get enthusiastic and get behind this.
You know, yeah. I am often very disappointed in folks that say they believe the things that I say I believe when it comes to, you know, conservatism and the government and the freedoms that we have and the right to life and all of those things, but they don't turn out most of the time in the elections. I talk to people. I try to rally people. Now, we've talked about this a lot. Sometimes I'm thinking there are people I don't want them to vote because I think they're so uneducated that,
I agree. I've never been a big believer in get out the vote. And the things that conservatives will apologize for, I'm not going to apologize for caring about the life of a baby. I'm sorry. Yeah. I will not apologize for that. Call me what you want.
Well, I will. And but I understand. I understand that pastors are worried about losing members who pay tithes. I understand that politicians are worried about losing votes.
It's more important than tithes. It's more important than how many show up at the Wednesday night potluck.
Absolutely. So, but there are fears that people have. And then there's the fear of being shunned because we are a very politically correct culture now. And we're pretty much driven by social media. There, we do have platforms like this show and this station, and there we have them across the country. But, you know, most people are they're looking at Twitter and Facebook and those things, and that's how they get their education.
And hindsight and heroism is always 20/20. The people that are yesterday's heroes in their days, they amassed a great deal of criticism.
Yeah.
They came under the gun quite a bit.
Yeah, and so those are the things we're up against. One of the things I was writing notes here, there is the issue of conscience as well when it comes to abortion. As Dana, your wife, works with women, and you know our friends in Texas, the Justice Foundation and the Operation Outcry, tremendous, tremendous program. It's a ministry, really, where they try to bring healing into people's lives instead of beating them over the head with the Bible and
exactly.
saying, you murderer.
Exactly. Right, right.
And women need that. Men need that. Men who stood by. I just, the thing popped into my mind when the serpent tempted Eve, according to Genesis, Adam was there and he saw what was going on. And I think the same kind of thing is taking place in the abortion thing. Sometimes there are men who know what's happening and they know it's wrong, but and in some cases they force the issue, especially if they're not married.
And they've been told that they don't have any say in the matter because it's not their body and not their choice. But should the woman decide to have the baby, suddenly it's just as much the man's. Can you imagine him saying he's not going to pay palimony?
Well,
so it doesn't. This doesn't really work both ways. There's no consistency to this.
They still feel
the same guilt. Of course
the guilt
they
pangs.
Do.
And
sometimes they're the ones who talk women into having abortions.
Yeah.
The early feminists lobbied for the right to not have to have abortion because in those days in that culture, their husbands were forcing them to have them. So things have really changed today.
Things have changed. But I think there is a great issue of conscience that is involved. And you know, my friend Jiminy Cricket.
I believe we talked about Jiminy on our last show or one of our recent ones.
And when he was assigned to be the conscience and Pinocchio said, what's a conscience? And Jiminy said, it's that still small voice inside of everyone that no one listens to.
No one wants to listen to.
And,
exactly.
And that's, we have that problem on incredible levels in our society right now, whether it's the abortion issue and life, all kinds of things where we just start blinding ourselves. We don't want to face the truth because it hurts too much. And so we're fleeing our responsibility on these issues. So there we go. Now we've done our second segment. But that was spot on. Spot on about the
thing.
Thank you. And we will see. I'm not convinced that it is going to happen. And I know, like you said, some of the conservatives are just
excited jumping
up and down.
I'm sure Roberts won't go along with it, but we'll see what the other conservatives do.
We will see. Yeah. Man, it's just funny how they change from being a conservative to being a middle of the road.
Because our country has been sold this lie that being mainstream means being liberal. So you're an extremist if you're on the right. You're not an extremist justice if you're on the left. You never see the justices on the left move more to the right. The others move more to the left.
Always,
but they'll say they're moving more to the center.
And if you're too conservative, you'll be labeled as a terrorist, a domestic terrorist.
Yeah, well, that's the way Biden's trying to label people right now.
You know, and you know, of course, you made a great point. He used the word child, but, you know, Joe's command of the English
language
is not his strong suit.
Joe accidentally speaks the truth once in a while.
His command of the language is not his strong point.
No, it's not. But once in a while, he has his moments. It's that old adage that we've used before. Give a monkey a typewriter, sooner or later he types a word.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, I don't know how far we are to break. It is Mother's Day, and I thought an appropriate topic, because we're talking about would-be mothers, and actually, once that child's conceived, I'm real radical. I think life begins at the point of conception.
Well, they've pretty much scientifically proven that now.
Yeah, but however long she carries that child, she's a mother. And when that child dies, now she's a grieving mother. And so I think it was an appropriate subject to talk about on Mother's Day, though not a particularly uplifting thing, but it's the reality. And sometimes we just have to face the truth and say, this is what we're looking at. But I wanted to say happy Mother's Day to every mom, every stepmom, every person who is a spiritual mom, or you have mentored someone in a mother role, however it applies. God bless you, moms out there, for everything you have done. I wanted to share a little bit about my mom.
And she passed away. It was a couple of
years ago. And which... just seems like the other day.
She lived out here in San Diego.
She lived here all... Well, my mother was a second-generation San Diego native. I'm a third. She grew up in the same house her father grew up in National City. And I remember going to that house many times because my grandmother always had ice cream in the freezer. But my mom was an extraordinary woman. She was widowed and single and raised my sister and I from the time I was 9 years old. And was a working mom, working single mom, which was not real common in the 60s, early 60s. But she fought and she worked and she supported us and raised us without any help from anybody. And here was a woman with a high school education, went to Sweetwater High, for those of you down in the South Bay area. I was born in Chula Vista. And mom just persevered. She felt like she had a job to do, and so she stepped up and did it. So she got a job and worked at the phone company, Ma Bell, before deregulation, and she worked there for a long time. And then when I finally graduated from high school, she went and got certified and got her real estate license and started selling homes. And she was very successful. In fact, I still have a newspaper clipping where she won an award. She was the top salesperson for her particular company selling homes in the San Diego area. She was very successful. And moved from Lemon Grove out to, had a luxury condo down in Crown Point in Mission Bay, and went and bought a Mercedes and paid cash. And she was doing great. And she burnt out on it. And it was, there's just a lot of reasons why she thought, I need to tone it down. So she cashed in, took money in it, and went to school and became an LVN.
An LVN is
a nurse.
What? Oh, okay.
A licensed vocational nurse.
Proclaiming my ignorance. Right.
That's
over.
Okay.
I've never been great with the abbreviations.
Well, you better get with it. That's all it is anymore.
Oh, I know. Acronyms. I know.
She was
a
licensed vocational nurse and eventually wound up being a hospice caregiver. And she just lived this incredible life, just kept bouncing back. And then she retired from nursing and she bought a house back in Lemon Grove again. And she called me one day and said, honey, I have to sell your inheritance. I said, what are you talking about? She said, I'm gonna sell the house. I said, Mom, it's your house, not my house. And she said, I just can't do the upkeep anymore. I'm going to sell it and take the money and invest it and live off interest. Said, sounds good. So she did that. She sold her house, which she had paid maybe about $30,000 for it, and then sold it for $600,000.
Oh, of course, of course. Well, that is your bet. That's your nest egg for the future.
Well,
if you
she did great,
home.
And then she invested it. She lived off the interest, and then she called and she said, "You know, I'm a little nervous about the stock market. I'm going to pull my money out of the stock market." And you remember when the stock market crashed?
Did she pull it out back in 08? Yeah. Is that what?
Yeah, that's right when before everything crashed.
Yeah,
she took her money out and just put it in the bank.
Good for her.
Beat the system. This is a woman with a high school education and no training formally and that stuff. And then after a while, she called and she said, you know, this one bank, she diversified, she had several banks, and she said, I'm a little nervous about this one bank. And she took all the money out of that bank, and a couple of weeks later, that bank crashed and folded.
Must have been watching the Mutual. That's where I had my moment. Although they were bought out by Chase, so yeah. I was okay.
But she, you know, she just kept beating the system, and it was some of that intuition you've always heard about that mothers have, and I think God was just guiding her.
Did she get around the death tax? Because don't they try
to
take 50% for that?
Well, she was smart, and I have an older sister who lives out in Arizona now, and so Mom put my sister's name on the house.
Okay, and everything. So when she died,
my sister just took over the thing.
That's the way you do it.
Mom was brilliant.
Yeah,
and I just thought it would be a good night to honor her.
Absolutely.
And
all mothers everywhere.
And as I always said, if your mother didn't have any children, neither will you. So, so happy Mother's Day, Mom. And she became a person of faith late in life, faith in Jesus Christ. She was one of those people that say she was spiritual. When I was growing up, she was into Edgar Cayce and Gene Dixon.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
Reincarnation and stuff like that. But she came around to faith.
Now, were you part of the testimony that brought her to the Lord?
Eventually. Actually, when I became a Christian, I was at Skyline Church, and I was a teenager, and I was so gung-ho and so self-righteous that I really turned her off and a number of people. It took years to undo the damage I did from my early zeal.
Yeah, but, I'm not too proud of my early zeal either.
Well, I know. But she used to listen to this show, and she was uber conservative, which is unusual because she liked what we were saying politically, but then
she wasn't sure what to do when we got into God and Jesus.
And this is after she became a believer in Jesus. Was on the show, and I told her, you know, I'm on this show here, and so she started listening. But she was very, very conservative, which is unusual because she was truly a pioneer as a liberated woman. Here she was working, educating herself, and everything pointed to she should have been a liberal persuasion.
Well, people who were liberals in the 60s are conservatives now. We're the true liberals. The price tags and titles have all been switched around.
Well, my mom always just said she had this common sense about things, and she saw right and wrong, and she saw what was happening in the country. She would be furious right now with what's going on in Washington and in our country.
And with what's going on in San Diego County, I'll dare say.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, she was a teenager in World War II. She remembers when they bombed Pearl Harbor. She remembers the Day of Infamy speech, the whole thing.
And there was a lot of concern that the next attack could come to San Diego because of our naval base here.
Yeah, yeah. This was a target. Anyway, you know, here's to Mom, who always seemed to have an eye for things, for truth, and eventually that produced the fruit of her spiritual life. On the one hand, it was hard when she died. You know, you grieve. And the first few years, every birthday, Mother's Day, I'd pick up the phone and think, oh, she's not going to answer the phone, you know. But I was also pleased that she came to peace with God. And that's the one thing that you console yourself with a loved one. You know you're going to see him again. And I believe that. I believe I will see her again. And so that's my story about my mom. All of you have stories out there. Those of you that are moms, you have stories about what your kids put you through. last thing. When I was a teenager, my mom was working and everything was concerned about me. She felt I was going in a bad direction. And I was just a typical teenage boy. But she was talking to her closest friend, said, I don't know what to do with Jimmy. He's getting into trouble and stuff. And her friend said, well, have you tried praying? And my mom was not a religious person. She said, well, I've tried everything else. I might as well.
There you go. What do you got to lose?
She told me this years later after I was in the ministry and everything. She said, so this is my prayer. I said, God, I don't know what to do with this boy. You do something with him. And within 6 months, I had converted to Christianity.
Interesting. So even before she was a Christian, it was her prayer that brought you about. And then obviously God used you as a testimony to her.
Yeah, isn't that something? There's nothing more powerful than a mother's prayers.
Yeah, absolutely. And that works for a lot of people. I became a Christian in college, and I found out that a guy that was in one of my classes who I didn't even know him. I recognized him. I met him afterwards, and mm-hmm. he was a Christian. He used to just sit in the back of the room and pray for me, probably because of my big mouth and arguing with the professors about everything.
You argued with professors?
Even before I had anything to argue about and no real passion about anything, only because I liked hearing myself talk. Praise God he gave me something to talk about after all.
Yeah,
but it was such a testimony to the power of prayer because he really quiet guy, didn't even know him. Every single day he prayed for me.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I got to know him after I became a Christian. He was a great guy.
Yeah. And that's an encouragement that I would have for everyone. You can pray. You may not be able to argue a person. You can't argue somebody into the kingdom of God. It doesn't happen. But you can make a case. You can plead your case. But even when those things don't work, you can pray. And believe me, trust me, prayers work.
And the older I get, well, you're on my prayer list. The older I get, the slightest little thing now, I'll ask people to pray for. Now, I have about 200 people on one list. I only contact them when it's a big thing. But there are a few close friends like yourself where if I'm just having a bad day, I'll just ask for prayer. Yeah. Because cliche as it sounds, the older I get, the more I realize that that's what it's all about. That is how he works through prayer. Okay, hang with me over the break. You're listening to the Bob Siegel Show with Jim Barrier. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. And now it's time for another episode of Stump Jim Barrier.
I got to come up with a better intro, but that
we talked last time about having a little piece of music or applause. We've got to remember to do
all
that.
Right, I'll remember next time for sure.
Next time.
Use music and applause for so many other things on this show. How are we missing the granddaddy of them all, Stump Jim Barrier?
I'll work on it next time.
What do you got this time?
So we're going to go to the year 1972, and I decided to be a little clever with this Stump Jim.
This is the year I graduated high school. I should know this one.
All right.
But I'll let Jim guess first.
Right. Okay. Oh, I know this. Oh, well, that's Jim Croce.
Yeah.
Bad Leroy Brown.
That is correct.
Is this bad? I know Bad Boy Leroy Brown. I was not recognizing this intro, though.
Oh, wait, hold on.
It took me a second.
Yeah, let's play a little of it. Great song, but I did not recognize the intro for some reason.
Oh, no, this is not. Sorry, I messed that up. It's not Bad Leroy. It's actually You Don't Mess Around.
Don't Mess Around with Jim.
Oh,
You messed around with Jim.
No wonder your old pal Bob didn't recognize it as Leroy Brown. It wasn't Leroy Brown.
And for those of you who are wondering, I did that on purpose, by the way. Yeah. I wanted to mess with Jim so
you
I could
did.
Do that.
You messed around with Jim.
There you go. So
okay.
Yeah. Really, I love Jim Croce, by the way. He's a really, really talented artist.
He was, and he died in a plane crash, too, didn't he?
One of the many, many artists. I don't know.
I keep telling people, if you're in rock and roll, don't get a private plane. It doesn't work out for some reason. You can just go.
Too many of them.
Ricky Nelson.
Stevie Ray Vaughan. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Buddy Holly. Yeah. It just goes on and on and on.
Wait, yeah. Stevie Ray Vaughan was a helicopter?
I believe so.
Okay.
I was wrong. Well, if you're in rock and roll, don't get a helicopter tonight. Either.
Well, yeah, if the planes don't get them, the drugs do. And this is another theory I have. We just did a rabbit trail on rock and roll here, but there are a number of these guys that are beginning to profess faith. And my theory is they've lived long enough, they've watched all their friends and peers die from drug overdoses and plane crashes, and they're thinking, you know what, I'm lucky to be alive. And they start searching for truth, and they've tried everything else, they've had everything else, and there's been quite a few of them that have come to faith, and it's very exciting. So
yeah, but I remember Bob Dylan did. I don't know if it ever took in the passage of time, but he did for a while.
I have a mutual friend and asked him, and he said, Bobby's good with Jesus.
Good. So, good to hear that.
He just doesn't want
to
be anybody.
You've got to serve someone.
You know what? If you listen to those three albums that he did, Slow Train, Shot of Love, and Saved, the lyrics in those songs were just profound and deep, and he couldn't have written those things unless there was a genuine
He's really just a lyricist. Yeah. That man is a poet.
Yeah, he's something. So, yeah, Bobby's going to be there, and I think there will be a few surprises. I also know some that I doubt very seriously are going to be there. But, yeah, I'm still a big Bob Dylan fan. I don't go see him anymore. I used to see him every time he was in town because I thought, well, it might be his last tour, but he's going to tour until Jesus comes, and he just can't. He never could sing, but I mean, his voice is so
shot. I've always liked the covers of his, like Peter, Paul, and Mary's Blowing in the Wind. I love that so much more than when he sang it himself. But he's the guy that wrote the song, so he has to get all the credit.
I have a playlist on my phone that has 210 songs and counting, separate songs, 210 different songs sung by artists other than Bob Dylan, songs that he wrote.
Yeah.
And they're all better than his version.
They are. How many years does a mountain exist before it is washed to the sea?
That sounded like Yoda.
That was a better Yoda. But then Yoda can sing better than Bob Dylan. So.
Blowing in the Wind, the answer is.
Better singer I am.
Okay. Wanted to come back to the thing where it's Mother's Day. And one of the concerns that I have right now is the right of parents to raise their own kids and be the one who is responsible for that. And Joe, who we mentioned a lot already tonight and every week, you know, said, they're not your kids. They're our kids. What the heck is that?
The stuff that comes out of that guy's mouth.
But there are people that believe that.
Absolutely. And there are people pulling his puppet strings, making him say that, too. Yeah. He didn't think of that himself.
And the following opinions are not those of Bob Siegel, KCBQ, or the Salem Broadcasting
Network. There we go. All right. We're all covered, Jim. Go ahead.
I would, if I had school-age kids, I would pull them out of public school. I would homeschool them. I'd put them in a Christian school, but I would not leave them in the public education system.
Not anymore. There was a time when the public education system worked very well, but those days are gone. That ship has sailed.
And I've taken it to the next level now. I have 5 grandchildren, and I used to think I want my kids to go to college so I can have a good job. I don't want any of my grandkids to go to college. Go to a trade school and learn something.
I was telling parents 20 years ago to get their kids out of college, and I'm a college grad, and I love going to college campuses, but
it's a different era.
But now I wouldn't want to see them in a kindergarten or a preschool that's run by the public school.
So that's my opinion. I would yank them out of the public system. I would say go to a trade school or get, you know, do something with your time and money that's actually going to give you an opportunity to earn a living and avoid the indoctrination. I can't tell you how many of my friends whose adult children were serving God and just fine Christian, you know, even conservative, and they go to college and they come back, they drink the Kool-Aid, and they buy the whole agenda, and they argue with their parents, and we got to defund the police, and we got to blah, 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 blah. And I'm thinking, I know this kid. What happened? What happened was he went to school and he got brainwashed. It's my opinion.
Yeah, exactly. I remember one time I was listening to the Dennis Prager show, and he used to always say, you have to go to graduate school to have some of these opinions these days. And this was when somebody shot up some people at Mall of America, back when George W. Bush was president. And of course, in those days, everybody was saying that Bush was Hitler. During Trump's days, Trump was Hitler. Any Republican is Hitler while he's in office, according to the left. But this guy calls in and says, we can't really blame the shooter. We have to realize that he grew up in a land of Cheney and Bush. So Dennis Prager just very calmly says, okay, we're about to come to a hard break. I want you to please stay on the line with me, and then I want you to come back and tell us where you went to graduate school. And the guy had never even said he went to graduate school.
Yeah.
And it turned out, of course, that he had, and that's where he heard that nonsense.
Yeah.
Anybody that just uses their lying eyes can't come up with that opinion.
Yeah, and it's that. And just to take it one more step, and then I think we're going to have some fun stuff again with Brandon, but it's crept into the church.
Oh, it unfortunately has, much so.
I have so many friends that are in ministry, pastors and people, and they've gone the politically correct route, and they don't want to offend people, and they don't want to lose those tithers, and for whatever reason, they've bought into a lot of this
stuff.
And
they shroud it with spirituality. Yep. I feel that Jesus wants us to be more compassionate and tolerant.
Tolerant and accepting.
And the Jesus that they're painting is not the Jesus of the Bible.
Yeah.
Jesus was forgiving and merciful. He was not tolerant of sin.
No, not one bit. Nor was Paul. But that kind of stuff, and they're going back to that old, higher criticism thing. They're saying, well, this part of the Bible is not relevant.
Yeah.
And then how do you decide which part is?
The objective scholarship is if I like it, it came from God. If I don't like it, it didn't come from God.
So there's too much of that in church. And I'm not talking about whatever you would consider lukewarm. I'm talking about the evangelical
churches. Yeah. There's a whole movement called the emergent church, and it's gone beyond that movement.
Yeah, I'm part of the pre-emergent church. Got to get those weeds out of there somehow. So anyway, that's some stuff that's going on. Now, does our friend on the other side of the glass have some questions?
Well, Brendan and I have been doing a thing the last few weeks where he's asking some great Bible questions.
Mm-hmm.
Since you're also somebody that has a Bible show on the air, I thought he could ask some questions to both of us. Since you're the guest, I'll give you first crack at the answer. And then people can hear the real answer from me when you're done.
Is this like a presidential debate?
That's right.
Oh, I hope not. Okay.
All right. So I have a question based on two excerpts from the Bible. The first is from Romans chapter 8, 29 through 30, verses 29 through 30. It states, for those God foreknew, he also predestined to be confirmed or conformed, to the image of his son, and that he might be the firstborn among many brothers and sisters. And those he predestined, he also called. Those he called, he also justified. Those he justified, he also glorified.
Okay.
The second passage is from 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 10. That one says, therefore, brothers, be all the more diligent to confirm your calling and election. For if you practice these qualities, you will never fall. My question is, if God's election is sure, then why do we need to make it sure? And where is our insurance in salvation?
All right. I'll take a crack at it. The first thing is, on passages like this, and really throughout the Bible, it's very important to understand the intent of the writer and what that word was intended to mean, what it meant 2,000 years ago, as opposed to how the modern-day language interprets it. So, let's take on the word predestined. I flew out here a week ago from Baltimore, BWI, Baltimore Washington International Airport, and I had a destination, I had a ticket, I had a boarding pass, and it was pre-planned that I would come to San Diego. Now, if you've flown, especially in the last 2 years in the COVID era, I wonder if we're going to have calendars that are going to be pre-COVID and post-COVID.
Well, anyway. That's the joke now. It's no longer BC, meaning before Christ. It's before COVID.
Before COVID.
Yeah. That's what we were talking about last time with marriages.
It was exactly. We talked about that just last week.
Yeah. So I have had flights. I had one flight trying to get here to San Diego. I got canceled three times and kept coming back and then got rerouted and then got delayed. And it took me forever, but I was predestined to come to San Diego. I had a destination that was preset, but there were interruptions. They were due to circumstances beyond our control. There were things that happened. Predestination in this context, first off, he's talking about that we are predestined to be conformed into the image of Jesus Christ. That's what our predestination is, okay?
Correct.
But it doesn't mean that every single element of the timeline is set and cannot be deviated from. If that were true, then God would be limited to that predestination. He would be small if he couldn't change his mind, if he couldn't say, you know what, we're going to take a detour here. Look at the Bible. I have over 100 examples in the scripture where God changed the plan. I'll give you a couple of instances. He told Moses, step aside, I'm going to wipe these people out. And Moses interceded and God stayed his hand of judgment. Jonah, the book of Jonah, he didn't say, tell them to repent. He said, tell them destruction's coming. And they repented and he changed. It says God relented. God is big enough that he can do whatever he wants. He's sovereign. And if he wound up this little clock that he could no longer control, he wouldn't be God. So that's my take on the predestination thing, but it doesn't mean what the Calvinistic interpretation has called it to be and taught most people what it is. Firstborn, that's a great one, because people go, well, one particular movement says, well, see, he was created. Jesus was the firstborn, so he was created. No, he was the firstborn from the dead. You have to read the rest of the book.
Yeah, they're referring to his resurrection.
Yeah, he was firstborn from the dead.
He existed already as God, but as a human being, that was a birth.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So he was resurrected, which means now we can be resurrected. So he was firstborn, we follow. What else do we have here? Oh, boy, election. Election, is it an election year?
It is an election year. Boy, that last 2020 election was sure predestined.
That's right?
Well, there was some hanky-panky going
Biden
on there.
Biden was predestined to win that before anybody even went to the poll. Anyway, that's another story.
We are the elect in that we have been adopted into his family, but there is the free will factor. And those who have chosen to accept God's provision through his vicarious atonement of his son, Jesus, who is his virgin birth, sinless life, resurrection, and ascension, and we put our faith in that, we become part of the elect. But it is not that God says some are going to get saved and some are going to go to hell. If that were true, why do we have evangelism? Why do we bother praying? Why do we send out missionaries? It doesn't make any sense. Why did Paul spend so much of his time writing, telling people to not sin?
Why did Jesus stand over Jerusalem and weep because they weren't going to accept him? And then he turns around and says, but it's my will that you don't accept me because you don't have any free will and you were predestined. Yeah. It just doesn't wash.
It doesn't. And we've talked about that on other shows. So the words get us confused because we have this 21st century Calvinistic understanding of what those words mean. And as you know, I'm not much of a Calvinist. If you take the five classic points of Calvinism, I'm 180 from all of them, which is the tulip thing, you know, the Calvin tulip. Anyway, so does that help a little? Do you want to jump in on some of this?
I'll throw in my two cents. Getting back to what Jim's saying, we can see certain words in the Bible that certain theologies use. That doesn't mean they're using them properly.
Right.
The word predestination is in the Bible. The word election is in the Bible. The Bible does not mean what the Calvinists claim. You look at Romans 8 and Romans 9, and it says those whom God foreknew, he predestined. So he knows ahead of time what decision we're going to make, and what he predestines is for us to become like Jesus. He's not predestining that we're going to get saved in the first place, because that's a decision that we make. Let Brendan go ahead and respond.
I was also going to say, it sounds like also we talked about James chapter 2, verse 19, about even the demons believe and they shudder.
Yeah,
and
right.
You were mentioning how that's the
Greek word
term.
Believe means different things depending on the context.
Correct. So it sounds like a very similar characteristic.
Exactly.
There is so much of that in our modern Bible language. And so next to my Bible, I've always got my Strong's Concordance and a lexicon. And I'm looking because sometimes there's a little bit more of a depth or a little light that is shined if you look on the original intent. And on that thing, that was the other word, foreknowledge. The word is prognosco, which is where we get prognosis, where a doctor says, this is what I think is going to happen, or the weatherman says, this is what the weather is going to be. So foreknowledge isn't even an absolute fixity. It's the things that God projects and says, this is what's going to happen. But sometimes it doesn't happen.
And God is removed from time. If God knows somebody is going to choose to become a Christian, he plans a Christian life for them, Romans 8.
Yeah.
Romans 9, Paul says, on the other hand, if God knows somebody is not going to become a Christian, he plans a way to use them for some other purpose despite themselves. And so there is something that's being predestined, but it's not at the level of our will. It's at the level of God knowing ahead of time what we were going to do. And he's such a master chess player that he, if I was going to be playing with a genius Russian brilliant chess player, it's predestined that I'm going to lose that game. But
you're
still make a move on the board. I may even make a move that he wishes I hadn't moved, but he will take that move and make it a part of his own master plan.
I just want to say, I love how this correlates to all the other questions we you answered a couple weeks ago as well. So in terms of like how I asked you, well, why does God still make non-believers if that's the case? And again, this question correlates with that one too.
Can I throw one more in? Do we have a minute?
We have about 30 seconds, but go for it.
There's an Old Testament thing that says the days of your life were written in, I have your book was written and all of that. Do you know now we understand DNA and your DNA, an unborn child's DNA already has the information about what diseases they're susceptible to.
Exactly.
All of that stuff. So he wrote a book and it's called DNA. That's what that's about. Okay.
Right. And I would also say being removed from time and seeing everything is part of that book as well. All right. As usual, Brendan, great questions. As usual, Jim, great having you on the show.
Loved it.
You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. We will see you all next time.
The Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the law offices of Matthew Simone.